Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Taking a break from the Sunday Wrestling Observer Live duties to actually return to my own podcast for once. And joining me this time, Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics once again for a look back at April, May, and June in the world of AEW business. We talk about attendance and how they did financially and some conflicts and all those type of things. Again, it's kind of our version of a AEW quarterly investors call without knowing all the details. Login information here and also some antitrust talk. You were looking forward to that on Wednesday, weren't you? Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics and Josh Nason coming up right now on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Well, I pulled him away from some Excel docs, at least for a few minutes, and Netflix numbers and charts.
The Netflix numbers have literally just come out.
I just saw that. Yeah.
You get an alert? I thought I had the exclusive exclusively cornered the market on the Netflix alerts.
You know what my alert is? I just have a tab open. I refresh it.
Oh.
And you know what I did? However, a rookie mistake yesterday. I kept refreshing it thinking they came out Mondays.
And no, it comes out on Tuesday.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't do them.
Let's
last
talk about the Netflix number. Let's just cover that entirely instead.
Yeah, that's right. 2.8 million views.
Yep.
And I'm on the inter.
5.3 million global hours viewed.
So that's down from last week. Last was 6.1, right? 6.1 hours viewed.
Who remembers these things?
I think I do. Just because I wrote it yesterday. And then because I have a template that I put together.
What do you think? I write about this every week or something. And last week was the post SummerSlam, and that was 3 million global views, 6.1 hours.
There you go.
So that was an especially highly viewed episode. That was August 4th. This one that just came out is fascinating, audio, I'm sure, for people to listen to a few days after this is, first being reported on. 2.8. So a better number than they had been doing outside of the post SummerSlam.
Yeah. There you go. Well, I mean, 2.8, but really it's probably like, what, 500,000 viewers at this point? Is that...
Unless these numbers are completely made up.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Can't believe these
streamers. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, can't believe the streamers. But however, I mean, and we're going to talk about AEW. I think they must be doing like 1.5, 2 million a week total with their viewership.
Who's to say? Just make up a number and you can have any theory.
That's right. Well, so if you're joining us now, I'm joined by Brandon Thurston once again for our somewhat quarterly check-in on AEW business from the second quarter. This one always seems to be a little bit later every year because vacations and all those type of things.
I don't go on vacation. I don't do that.
I do. I was allowed to. I almost back-to-back vacations for the first time in a long time.
I come from the Nick Khan school of hard work. Okay? I don't do out-of-office notes. I don't do vacations. I don't ever get tired. Mm-hmm. I am just going to go and go until I die.
That's right. Do you think he was saying that while he was an usher at WrestleMania back in, over a decade, 15 years ago, whatever it was, in Las Vegas?
I don't know. I think, if you go from being an usher to running the show, essentially, I guess you probably worked hard.
He must have worked 24/7 at that venue because he'd never get tired.
Quick stop at Wheel of Fortune Studios.
True. Yeah. True. I did a bit on that on Wrestling Observer Live on Sunday, and that I understand why Nick Khan said that and says it, because I think if you're a sports executive at that level, you don't ever want to be the person that's like, oh, I'm busy, I can't do this or whatever. And I think he doesn't want to miss losing the deal. But then again, if he's on a vacation, he's at some place that's like way more ritzy than a place that maybe I would go to. I don't know about yourself, but someplace he takes the family, and it's kind of part of the understanding between family members. It's just like sometimes dad's going to take a call. But however, look at this beautiful ocean view that 1% of the world gets to view. You know what I mean? It's kind of a trade-off. So I understand he says the out of office is never on, but that's because he's at the level he's at, and it probably should not be. But I think for some people in the world,
he might have a home or two.
Might have a home or three or four. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I'm sure. Yeah. Have you seen he's been liquidating some of his stock compensation.
Of course.
So yep. I think he's doing well for himself.
I think he is. He is, Yeah, the never tired thing is always good too. I know he's one for small talk. I don't even think I've ever seen him laugh or even smile.
He definitely laugh. I think he does.
I think
Yeah.
his voice changes on some of the TKO calls when the light shed guy, Brandon, talks to him.
Well, that's Mark Shapiro. I mean, like the TKO calls are mostly Nick is on there a little
He
bit,
was on
and
there
he's
last time,
apparently
yeah.
in the room, but
Yeah.
it's mostly Mark Shapiro. Mark Shapiro is not getting enough attention from the wrestling media and the wrestling space. People don't know
Well,
who he is, and that's a problem for me.
yeah, we've tried. We've tried. You and I and you and John have tried. But let's talk about another person in the space that gets not very
Okay,
much
fine.
publicity, Tony Khan. So we're going to talk about the quarter, second quarter of 2025. So April, May, and June. So obviously, this will not include All In. However, we will talk a little bit about All In and some of the big headlines, business wise. Again, this isn't storylines or anything like this, but. Some of the big headlines to me, AEW pushed more international. They announced August's Forbidden Door from London, which is coming up this Sunday, as you're hearing this. Also announcing that Dynamite and Collision, which will be happening from Glasgow, Scotland tonight, as you're listening to this. This is going to run on Wednesday.
Oh.
And then All Out was heading to Toronto, and they had made the announcement. Plus, they did the show at Arena Mexico as part of a very big week down there. So they're slowly growing internationally in terms of going and doing shows overseas and in that case, different in different parts of the Americas. But they haven't really kind of done the full push like the tour like WWE is about to do starting this weekend where they're just gone for the better part of a couple of weeks. Different companies, but still I'm surprised they haven't kind of done that yet. But I don't know. They're holding back for whatever reason and here we are.
I bet the expenses greatly outweigh the potential incremental revenues, right? Like if you're WWE, you're going to charge an arm and a leg for some international ticket prices for TV coming to Italy for the first time ever. And they're, we have some of those numbers. I reported some of them. They did, multi-million dollar gates for some of those shows. And that probably takes care of the added expense of getting all your stuff and your people to Europe, for example. But for AEW, I'm sure they would do a better attendance than usual, but would they generate the live event revenue and the merchandise revenue that would justify offsetting the added cost? I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know what other countries that they're big in or
They did
notable.
Australia.
They did Australia, they've done England, they've done obviously Canada, now Mexico as part of their partnership with CMLL. But I'm curious about if there's any other countries where maybe especially in Europe where they might have a little bit more foothold than we're thinking. I mean, they've already said, I mean, Tony Khan has said, do the ITV deal. That they are, with the biggest wrestling company in Europe or the UK, I believe he said. So he said that. So, I mean, he should be running shows every night there,
Basically,
Yeah.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways, WWE is a roadmap for AEW in terms of, well, what are the territories that they've gone to that they've had some success in? And that would be France and Germany and Italy. And were there any others that were part of that recent European tour that they did?
I don't know. That's a good
Belgium?
question.
Didn't they do
Bel
Belgium?
I almost said Belgium. Luxembourg was not, but I know. I think Belgium definitely was. Can I remember that's what John Cena did. Might have been the first heel promo he did was from there, I think.
Yeah.
But I remember specifically John Cena in Belgium and me looking at that several times and thinking, wow, that's a strange sentence to say. WBD splitting into two entities or intended to split into two entities at some point in 2026 with the following the Comcast NBC Universal thing, we're splitting off this. Everyone's doing it, splitting off the cable networks into one package, and taking the movie studio and basically all the really potentially valuable assets and splitting them off into one. And Mr. Zaslav is going to be managing
Yes.
that, and then Werner Goebbels, is that
Gunnar.
Gunnar? Yes, Warner Gunnel, Gu Gunnar, Gunnar Warnerheim. What the hell
Come
is
on.
this?
Come on.
Gunnar.
You all
Something.
just learned who David Zaslav is.
Yep.
You got to learn who Gunnar Weidenfels
Oh,
is.
I almost said Fels. Damn it. Yes. Good.
Who is the chief financial officer of Warner Brothers Discovery? And if you're making a movie and Gunnar calls you as I think was said in the, I don't know, it was Variety or some of the one Hollywood trade. If Gunnar is calling you, you're fucked.
Yeah.
But
Lunar.
now calm down. Tony said, I think on the last media call, that he has a great relationship with Gunnar just as well as he does with David
With
Zaslav.
both
Okay.
guys. Yeah.
Everything is going to be fine.
Yeah. The Sled Dog course, yeah, more gloom and doom AW talk and not realizing, obviously their deals are for a little bit longer. But I still don't understand, and perhaps I missed this. So they're going to the entities that are on cable
Yeah.
are going to have separate streaming deals
I don't know how
for
that's going to
Max
work.
after this. I don't either,
I
because
suppose.
but that doesn't, to me, it doesn't make any sense because you have all these.
So to be clear for people, so the David Zaslav gets all the cool assets, which includes HBO and HBO Max and some movie studios, and then the CFO Gunnar Wijnfeld gets all the dying assets, the cable networks. So I don't know how that's going to work in terms of. I assume everything's going to be as it is for the duration of AEW's deal in terms of it's going to be on HBO Max as well as TNT and TBS for the remainder of their deal at least.
Yeah, I can't. From a common sense standpoint, I cannot picture, say, AEW re-ups with the cable side for, say, another 4 years, right? Just throw that out there. I can't imagine them saying, okay, now we're going to go shop around our streaming rights somewhere else. That wouldn't make any sense to me. You'd want to keep it within. It's not like it's two separate companies that aren't working with each other. Just to me, it's, you may have to, on a technicality, have to sign some, but it doesn't make any sense to me to have something. Like it goes here, and then another thing could go completely away. It just doesn't, does not compute. Does not compute.
I don't know if they're going to essentially be controlled by the same company, but WBD will, I think WBD will continue to be just streaming in studios, and then there will be a separate company. Just this is what NBCU has done as well, or is
Going to
going to
do, yeah,
do
with
with
Versant. Yep.
Versant.
Yes.
The reason why NBCU and WBD are splitting these off in all likelihood is so that, it's easier to make a transaction. It's easier to sell these parts to somebody. And I think, that's probably the thing that we should think about the most is that, well, if TNT and TBS are in that old bucket of assets that Gunnar Wijnfeld's is going to oversee, and HBO Max is going to be in the David Zaslav cool kid comic book hero company. And by the end of this deal, which is a 3 year deal with an extra 1 year option up to 4 years. So that means what started at the beginning of this year, 2025 plus four is 2029. By 2029, the parent company of TNT and TBS could be a part of another company, such as the co parent company of USA Network or the parent company of Paramount.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and of course, yeah, the same thing I think we'll see with Paramount at some point as well, as they could split off some of those networks. I just finished a book about the history of MTV,
Oh.
and it is I mean, it's crazy to think that where it was, and just it followed it through its
Yeah.
complete cultural zeitgeist, now it changed things to where it is now, which is basically just a 24-hour airing of
Even knows
ridiculousness. It's just
the
it,
challenge does well. I see
Yeah.
that sometimes. The challenge. Maybe there's one or two other shows.
Yeah.
But I think, we're going to continue to talk about W throughout this podcast, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
WWE has deals, or UFC has deals with almost every major media company except for these remaining parts of WBD, and I don't know what influence that might have over AEW's next deal. If you want to doom that, that's the thing to doom about, I think. And what influence would they have in minimizing the number of partners that AEW could talk to, or even swaying an incumbent partner?
Feels kind of antitrusty, don't you think?
I don't want to get in. I don't want to libel anybody here. My speech has been chilled, okay?
Yes. And then also the other big headline we had, AEW All In, was before the show even began. This is a more than a week plus, because again, this came out in June. Companies it was already had set non-WWE North American records. So here we go. 2.5. So at this point, it's a $2.5 million gate with 19,000 paid tickets out. At that point, it was a non-WWE North American record gate and record gate record. Did I really write that? And a record for the largest paid attendance for a non-WWE pay-per-view show ever in North America. So obviously, I initially wrote that without the pay-per-view point part. And someone said, "What about the Georgia Dome with Hogan and Goldberg?" I'm like, "Oh shit." Yeah, so I screwed that up. But yeah, so they had already big and I remember being, all a little bit concerned about those all-in ticket sales early on. Like it was not selling like all-in from Wembley did. But then by the end of it, they had a well, I think pretty much near a $3 million gate is what Tony Khan said. And I think the paid tickets were 26, 25, something like that. He never gave a number. I think Dave may report something like that.
Yeah, what did they have for distributed 27,245 according to WrestleTix?
Okay.
I mean, this was a good show business wise, and I think
Yeah.
the I've never watched a second of this show because I don't have time for an extra job, but I heard that people really liked this show if they had time to watch it.
I watched it for you. It was entertaining and
Thank you.
very, very long. And my daughter saw her first ever pro wrestling match as a result. Yes. I've kept her
Okay.
away from this. She's eight. I've kept her away from pro wrestling because I think I don't want her to start emulating the moves and things like that. I don't want her to get in the business because I think
I wish my
she'll.
parents had done that with me.
And so my wife and daughter were out for most of the day, and then they came home. And the show was still going on,
Of
and
course.
so and I'm just like, yeah, I got to keep working and doing this. And she said, okay. And daughter sat right next to me. And she watched Okada versus Omega. That was her first ever full pro wrestling match that she watched, and she thought Kenny Omega was the bad guy because of just how he looked and his long hair, I guess, and whatever. And yeah, so we got to talk about psychology and things like that and trying to understand things. And
Selling.
yes, selling. Yep. So she understands a little bit about that. And when it came time for the Texas Death Match, she had to leave the room.
Should they be running two shows for at least some of their biggest pay-per-views?
I brought that up to in our internal Slack group. I said, I wonder this could be a two night thing potentially. That's all the rage these days.
Because clearly there's going to be no discipline to keep this to like under 4 hours or
No.
something, especially these big all-in shows.
No.
They just I did run the numbers somewhere around the runtime. Like I scraped all the runtime data from Triller or something, and yeah, this was what the longest
Oh, yeah.
major pay-per-view of all time. And to just add an extra day in terms of at least production expense is probably not that big of a deal. I mean, that's why they're always consolidating these Dynamite tapings to being double tapings on occasion and things like that. I guess the question is how you would distribute it as a pay-per-view in that case.
Right.
Remember the trials and tribulations over what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, where All In and All Out were 1 week apart or something like
Yes.
that,
Yeah.
and I have no hope that there's going to be a bundling system across all of these cable distributors and all the digital distributors. Triller maybe. But I don't know, maybe you just sell it as a la carte, $50 one day, $50 another day, or
Yeah.
I would not recommend lowering the price, but
Yeah. I do you think and I'm still catching up because I was on vacation. I know you were last week's Pollock and Thurston yet. Do you think the pay-per-view is essentially gonna be dead in 2026? It's
no.
gonna be just AEW and some scant boxing shows, but that seems to be about it. What do you think?
For niche products, it's still a reasonable model, I think.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a UFC or WWE and you have the luxury of negotiating with major media companies who are willing to pay you enough money to, enough money that the allure of running on pay-per-view is greatly outweighed, in terms of the money that you can make, then sure. For AEW, apparently that's not there because they made a new deal, and turning their pay-per-views into streaming premium live events was not a result of that deal. So it's they're bringing in, I'd have to do the math, they're bringing in millions of dollars every time they run a pay-per-view, and they would need, I don't know, something well in excess of like $20 million a year, or maybe you'd want a lot more than that to take the risk of moving away from pay-per-view. So I think it makes sense for AEW still because they're further down into the funnel where the group of people, the customers who want this, are smaller than it is, say, for a WEPLE, but it's something that people really want, and it's something that is for your hardest core of fans. And these are the people who are willing to part with $50 just to watch one show, or however they do it. They have friends over and split the cost, whatever it might be. So I think it still makes sense for them and for everybody else in wrestling below that, at least in like the North American market.
I think the narrative is going to start being, why would you pay $50 for a pay-per-view? I think that's going to start kind of leaking out there as kind of this anti AW. Oh, I'd pay nothing, or I pay $10 a month, or whatever it's going to be. Actually, be $30 a month
I
in the
feel,
span, but you get
are
all
you
this stuff.
trying to push that narrative right now?
I mean, I don't want to be accused of anything, but I mean, you'd be a sucker to pay. No, I'm just kidding. It is funny when, like, when WWE, when they used to chide their own fans for spending full price on a pay-per-view by not getting WWE Network. Like, why would you pay full price?
Well, I think that was the result of a business, of a business strategy being in the throes of them wondering why it wasn't more successful than it was. But no, I think pay-per-view makes sense for now until somebody wants to pay an enormous rights fee to get it off of pay-per-view for AEW.
How much would it take, do you think? 35 to 50?
You want to do the math right now?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So if $50 for a pay, they're running how many pay-per-views a year now? What, eight? So
10.
10? All right, what do you think the average?
10? Yeah, that sounds about right.
A number, we're probably only talking about domestic here, right? And let's
Yeah.
say 65%. Okay, so they're doing 10. Let's say the average buys is 135,000. So 10 times that is 1.35 million times 50. Okay. So times, no, times six, let's say 65% of the buys are US. So we're left with 877,500. Those buys times, let's say $50 is what everyone's paying. And now we're at 43.8 million, which is okay. But then there's going to be a split. So let's say their split is like 45%. 19.7 million. So something, that 20 million number I mentioned must be where that comes from. Something well in excess of 20 million incrementally, on top of everything else, which is what the $180 million deal or whatever it is that they're getting now.
Yep.
So you 200 million AAV, that might have done it. I don't know.
Time to watch.
Or
The
maybe a
meat.
lot more. I would think maybe a lot more than what your current thing is. But then again, if I'm the partner, I can make the argument that you should want to be away from pay-per-view because then you're going to be able to expose your best events to the widest audience, and that has a positive downstream effect. And there's evidence to support that.
Medium headlines. We got four-hour show experiments in a short amount of time, both Fyter Fest and Summer Blockbuster. We also had a all-in with the announcement is running earlier in the day due to WWE competition. WWE just happening to put Saturday night's main event on that Saturday, and also in addition to Great American Bash. AEW debuted Arena Mexico in June with Grand Slam as part of a big week. I thought it was a big success with them in CMLL. They did multiple events, and it seemed it was a fun show to watch, and certainly a different feel and flavor from Dynamite, which I think you definitely need to do. Dynamite became the quote unquote, I made sure I got this right, the longest running weekly pro wrestling show to air in prime time on a Turner network.
We beat Nitro.
Pop those bottles. There you go. That's right. That's right. Dynamite also hit 300 episodes just a couple months after this. Residency season, seven show residencies were set for Philly, and then a six show residency set for Chicago. So the Philly one actually starts this week, I do believe. And let's see, we had no update on Max and pay-per-view. Tony Khan was asked about this, saying, quote unquote, there was never an expectation that the technology would be ready in Q1 or even Q2 of 2025. So there's not a delay. He was asked about that in one of the media calls, asked about a delay in this. My prediction, this is never going to happen.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
Over under, does this happen before Q4 2029? Yeah.
Yeah. No. At this point, I mean, it's never going to happen. And I think that's the reason that they're pushing so heavy on Amazon Prime, is they want that. That's their. I think it's for a couple of reasons. I think that is where they want people to go. They have the technology set up, and must be getting a good deal behind the scenes. And yeah, I mean, they could be looking at them as a future. I don't know, future partner. You never know.
Yeah.
It's one of the few is not affiliated with WWE at this
I
point.
would
So,
think you want to be in business with Amazon, regardless of the revenue, because maybe it's a partner that you talk about putting a weekly TV show with someday.
Yeah. Triller was not mentioned in terms of the So Triller stopped carrying the domestic pay-per-views during this time, and it was really never addressed or mentioned. It was just kind of like people talked about it, and I think he was asked about it. He was basically just pushing, Amazon Prime. So they exist internationally, and for people with VPNs, it makes them happy, and that's
Triller still
that.
exists. Triller Group
Certainly
Inc.
does.
It exists for now.
Yeah,
I know
we'll.
there's been, there's the parent company is in financial dire straits. Triller TV, which is what fans are familiar with, that will probably survive in some form, even if the parent company does not.
Be very interesting to see how that plays out in the year ahead. The smaller headlines, AEW's the first 5 years, a book about them to be released in November, in conjunction with them. So Nogzak and unauthorized look at AEW. Another new Dynamite song is Tony keeps spending this money. He spent money on Bodies by Drowning Pool for Double or Nothing, and then also licensing the Sum 41 song for the new Open. And I mean, this
Is he
came
getting
to.
these rights in perpetuity? Like, if I put on Max, am I always going to be able to hear this music?
I mean, we'll see. I'm going to set a calendar no from a couple of years from now to see
Okay.
if that's the case. The Pointer Sisters song. I'm so
Well, if I
excited.
go back and watch those episodes right now, what would I hear those songs? I would assume I would,
I
that
think
those are
so.
rights in perpetuity.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. The company introduced the Ring of Honor, Tony Khan's other company, introducing a pure women's title that still they're trying to do a tournament, and because all these women keep getting injured, keeps changing his booking plans. He can't do anything about it.
That's what's happening in WNBA too.
I mean, true. Yes, very true. Very
Everyone's
true.
injured.
Very true. Ring of Honor also announcing Death Before Dishonor, and then they moved the location of that show, as well as Super Card of Honor. I believe they switched them, and then in that same announcement, they canceled a collision date for Kansas, I believe, and that was that is a thing. Company Goodwill
Why did they
co-producing.
cancel it?
Who knows? I mean, it may have just been
Tornadoes.
probably concerned about weather.
Dust Bowl.
Wizard of Oz convention. They may have just got pushed out. I'm not sure. But yeah, too many tumbleweeds. AEW has now said we're going to be co-producing two Dean Rasmussen tribute shows. And they did that before Double or Nothing in the parking lot, I believe, seeing to kind of build that goodwill with his fans. Darby Allin climbed Mount Everest, and he also set a kickflip world record. I bring that up because I don't think this really got any like mainstream attention. Pro wrestler climbs Mount Everest, and I think it probably should have. It wasn't like a it in our community it was big, but I think in the mainstream it just didn't really hit, which I think it was a kind of a unique story in today's climate. Collision episode had to end early due to tech issues, if you remember this.
I
Basically,
remember
the
that.
broadcast ended like 30 minutes early, and it took days and days and days for them to get this thing up on Max. It came up on, I believe it's available on the TNT app first. But you had to have TNT access to get it, and they got access to it before HBO Max subscribers did. And it was just a really weird, like, non-explanation thing, and all. It was just very strange. Very
And it
strange.
was Black Adam that started playing.
Yes, that's right. The Rock, I mean, his TKO influence, he's like, cut this early. And they did.
Yes.
And they did. Powerful guy. Powerful guy. And then I drink, I put this on here with four exclamation points. I thought this is a story that was completely underreported. So this.
I don't know what this is.
I drink. Oh, Brand. So I drink was a is a it was a new sponsor that was being brought on, and so the reason I saw this is it came to our
It
attention.
is a new kind of energy powered by science, built for mental clarity, physical balance, and daily performance without the crash.
So this was in mid-May. So I can't remember how we saw this, but it's a. It's a contract with the Maryland-based U.S. veteran-owned iDrink, who announced a deal on. So they announced a deal on social media, and AEW had not mentioned it at all. And so in their post, they said AEW is going to iDrink's going to be featured on AEW TV and also quote unquote several pay-per-view events with premier logo placement in the ring, and on the broadcast. They say AEW talent will also play a part in the AEW iDrink journey. And so the CEO, who has got some, he's got.
Norbert Verges.
Yes. So on his personal website,
Oh,
in
I
a post,
remember something about this.
yes, I think I sent this to you and John.
Yeah.
In a post dated April 8th, he put the contract up,
The contract.
the whole contract. So the marketing promotion deal became effective. So the contract said it became effective in October 2024 and was for 3 years and $3.575 million. So that caught my attention. And then in the contract said it was supposed to start in January 2025. The iDrink content shall ex air exclusively on TNT TBS television networks.
And this is on like his personal website,
Yes.
norbertverges.com.
Yeah. And I verified it and all that. And I was like, oh, it's his. Why it took 8 months, why it didn't begin in January, the dates are listed and all that stuff. I reached out to him and AEW, nothing. So this was supposed to be a bigger deal. So access to over
His
19,000 doors.
website is like his,
Now
he's
is.
in full uniform, and he
Yes.
appears to be a Fulbright colonel of some sort.
We're going to get there in just a second.
Okay.
So we're going to get there. So part of this deal. So this was, I mean, this is just candy for me. I'm looking through this whole thing. So it's supposed to be, let's see, access over 19,000 doors for direct on-shelf iDrink sales in the US, weekly live TV viewership with 97 million subscribers, WBD, and AW 2.2 million per live television broadcast. Supposed to be a co-presenting sponsor, pay-per-views, in-house graphics, access to 220 contracted wrestlers, over 137 million followers, match sponsorship, product placement at the desk, iDrink logo inclusion in the partners section of the website. And so AEW had not announced this deal, and I don't think they still have yet formally announced it. iDrink just started appearing on, I think, AEW Collision. There's nothing in the ring. There's no, none of this stuff has actually happened except for like on the dashboards and like I think at the table and some reads, but nothing like this. And then Verges himself, retired colonel in the US Army, was in the news in April 2015 for pleading guilty for criminal misconduct arising from his duties associated with various helicopter procurement contracts at Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, Alabama, according to the US Justice Department's website. In April 2016, he was sentenced to 5 years probation, a $10,000 fine, and 8 months home confinement. He became iDrink CEO in August 2023.
Well, that's a wrestling sponsor for you, I guess.
Color
Is this a
me.
federal charges he was facing, or what
Yes.
was it?
Yeah. You in the US. Yeah. It's
Huh.
the US Justice Department put a whole press release out about this when he was convicted. Yeah. And if you searched his name and all, it was like it was covered in the news back then. It wasn't like a huge national story, but it was in I believe, yeah, in Alabama and this whole thing. Yeah.
Okay.
So color me suspect, this guy's had these issues before. And then he puts all this stuff out and announces all this. They're not saying anything. I was just like, my flag just went like, I'm like, something is up here. So now they finally just slowly appear, but I don't think it is anywhere near a 3 year, $3.57 million deal. I'm just guessing.
No, I'm looking at Pacer, but okay, we can keep going.
Yeah. So there was that. All right. Let's go to we'll take a look at the live separate ticketed events. There were 20 separate ticketed events. So obviously if it's AEW Collision, double taping counts as one. There were 13 Dynamites of those, six double Collision tapings, five separate collisions, and two pay-per-views, which was Dynasty, which did 6,287 paid in Philadelphia with a gate of 401,373. That was reported by you. Pay-per-view buys between 110 and 120,000. Then Double or Nothing, 8,179 in Phoenix. There was no gate listed. And they did between 122 and 130,000 pay-per-view buys was the estimated range for those. So it was a little bit one less pay-per-view. We'll get to your numbers in a second here. Total TV broadcast there was 18. So I counted Fyter Fest and I almost said Summer Breakdown, Summer Blockbuster as one each. So they had their 18. I can type this out. 18 different broadcasts, 18 total broadcasts, and linear hours were 52. So
Okay, and their
there.
TV ratings are down, but
Yes.
what to make of that? I don't know.
Yeah, let's go to your KPIs then. So your KPIs, you can get these at WrestleNomics.com. Subscribe for just $5 a month. You get all kinds of stuff, including exclusives like this.
So the demo is down for Collision. The demo is down for Dynamite. The total viewership is down for Dynamite. The total viewership is down for Collision. We've got declines of anywhere between 31%, 25%, 12%, 9%. It's all down, so it's just how much of that is being offset by Max,
I mean,
think.
I want to correct you, Brandon. Tony
Yeah.
Khan said Then 2025 has been a huge year for us. They grew the business so much with the simulcast, creating a new audience with their simulcast on
I'm
Max.
sure he said that about all the years where the TV viewership was less defensively down and their attendance was down as well.
Excuse me. In addition to growing their cable audience year over year, I mean, do you not know that? When their simulcast
No.
began in January 2025, Brandon, people assumed their cable viewership would decrease, but actually, it went up.
In what, Q1?
I don't know. He said this during the quarter. I mean,
Yes.
you
I
talked about
remember
this
this
on, yeah.
being said, and it is false. And then he came out with a chart that was accurate and showed, but by I forget what the comparison is that he made, but I think sequential. So not from Q1
I
of this
see.
year versus Q1 of last year, that's down. But from like Q4 to Q1, it was up year over
Yes.
year, which is what is in our KPIs here, down mostly double digits.
Yeah, let's see, what else did I stood out on this chart to me? So the ranking, so you did the US ranking median weekly primetime shows 18-49 among cable originals and broadcasts. It actually went up in the quarter from the previous
Which is
quarter.
bad.
It's actually bad to go up.
Yes. Well, because your number is 65 in Q2, when in the prior year's Q2, you were 56. So
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
being number one is best, you see.
I see. Yes. Yeah. Collision was 129, so it was down from 104 the previous quarter. And then RIP Rampage still
Yes.
not existing.
Yes.
And let's see,
Now,
what
this flies in the face of something we said on Pollock and Thurston of late, which is that if you look at sequentially the trends in viewership, it does seem to be normalizing. We are still looking at things year over year in a time where we're comparing AEW's TV shows where they're being simulcast on a streaming platform versus a time when they're not, when they're exclusively being shown on traditional TV. So I see the rank sequentially and the viewership sequentially evening out. And up until at least recently, when they started to do these residencies, they've attendance has been in a similar trend.
Yeah, let's talk about attendance here. So we had 13 Dynamites, and the average was 3 point or 30 about 3,900 for a total of 51,000 tickets. That was again 32 Dynamites the quarter before, or the year over year rather, and that was slightly up. So up from 3.6 or 3,600, then up from 47,000 total. Collision had much fewer events at half the amount of events as the quarter the year before, from 10 to 5.
That created scarcity and demand, right?
No, because they only averaged
Oh.
2,200 people as opposed to 3,100 the previous
Oh.
year for a total
Okay.
of 11,000.
Well, the good thing you can spin here is that the Dynamite average is up, and that's I would have to look, but that's probably it's probably been quite some time since the year-over-year average for Dynamite attendance. According to this is WrestleTix data, has been up year-over-year for Dynamite. 3,900 in this quarter versus last year, 3,600.
So Collision down from, again, as I mentioned there, and the pay-per-views, they did one less show. And so they're down from 8,600 average in the second quarter of 2024 to 8,100 in 2025. So again, one less show. And yeah, so they sold 26,000 tickets a year before, and then it was 16,000 tickets. But again, you put one other pay-per-view in there, those numbers are probably pretty comparable, if not a little bit, I'd say maybe potentially a little bit better depending on where the show was.
Year, I think they're on track. I'm assuming they do the same number of pay-per-views. They're on track to be probably slightly down. Now, all in, these are all the observers' numbers here, but all in, and I took if they've give a range, I just averaged it. So it's all in, we have slightly up, but all the others are at least slightly down. There's a big difference on Revolution because we're comparing it to the Sting show.
Gotcha. Or you can get that information at WrestleNomics and yeah, ask your questions away. Let's see. Contracts. Section called contracts. We learned Ric Flair still under AEW contract, which was surprising considering I thought that ended with the other energy drink, Woo Energy, which I thought Tony Khan
They're
had.
paying for the contract.
Right. Well, apparently not anymore. If because that product is never seen on TV, so I'm not really sure how that works. But he says he's still under AEW contract. Kevin Knight said he has a dual deal with AEW and New Japan, so those dual deals are continuing. Shelton Benjamin revealed his deal is for 3 years, and the Willow Nightingale re-signed her deal. We also had some new signings, some free agents: Josh Alexander, Tekla, Mina Shirakawa officially under a full-time contract. Alex Windsor, same with her. We also had some one-offs. These were just, kind of one-night deals, but I had to put them in there because how when else am I going to be able to mention Master P on a podcast?
You will.
Rhino and Zach Gowen.
Yeah.
Zach Gowen returned to the ring for AEW. So Master P, Rhino, and Zach Gowen on the bingo card for 2025. Departures, the biggest one, of course, Mariah May, only signed a 2-year deal, no option for an extension, and they just, yeah, it was just done after the AEW Dynasty match. It was just done, and she was off to the land of WWE. Lesser talents or lesser profile talents, Layla Hirsch, Sarah Stock, who was, I get, coach there, and she was let go, or her contract not renewed. Same with EJ Nduka, The Righteous, Abaddon, Bear Bronson. And also Chris Jericho taking some time off. A lot of speculation about him. I talked about that a couple weeks ago on my show that I assume he is, when he was not at All In, my thought was that he's not coming back. I think it's the Guantanamo Bay of, if you're not going to use him and you're not planning to re-sign him and there's an impasse, they're ghosts. So he had said in an interview with, I think it was Variety or Hollywood Reporter, when he initially signed this player coach kind of deal, whatever it was,
Right.
that he had signed, that his deal was up at the end of 2025. And I think he did that very strategically to let people know there was no question about when he was going to be potentially done. That way you could start kind of getting the interest going. And yeah, I think that is a story that Dave talked about in Wrestling Observer on Monday. I think it's a fait accompli that he's gone and WWE is going to take him back in some capacity,
Will
which is
W
probably
take
the
him
right
back?
thing. Yeah, I think so. I think it's a chance to not necessarily have him do a full-time thing, because I think that'd be a little bit much. But you bring him back for the nostalgia pop and the Rumble or something like that. You have him do a couple matches, and I think you just kind of ease him into the you get him into the Hall of Fame highway, and he gets inducted either this year or the year after. And it's kind of a big deal. And he ends where he really became a big star. Obviously, he became a big star or a somewhat of a star in WCW, but then obviously WWE is where, most people remember that.
And if there are any issues between him and Polovek seems to want to make up with people, right? Not holding a grudge here, really.
No, of course not. No, I mean, Alberto El Patron, I'm sure he'll be
Unless,
back and, yeah.
unless you're AEW or unless you're Alberto, Well, I mean, Alberto's accused of some pretty serious things,
Yeah,
but
maybe.
that's not stopping them in other cases.
Exactly. Yeah, it's selective criticism and harboring of ill will, I guess.
Yes.
Let's see. We had some returns. Anthony Bowens, the Young Bucks, finally made their return from shredding all those papers. Trent Beretta, Roosh, Nick Comoroto, Bryan Danielson, sort of. He returned through Arena Mexico, and then he also made he, All In, but I think there was another one there. It's just an off-camera thing. He actually answered a Max Caster open challenge, I believe, that was shown off camera. So not fully back in the mix, but would make his on-screen return again at All In. Sky Blue, Tay Mello, and then Kota Ibushi. So not other than the Bucks, not a lot of big names there, but just some talents. Injuries: Orange Cassidy, Jay White, Peter Avalon, Mark Davis, Pac, Commander, Jamie Hayter, Harley Cameron, and then some of the side employees, backstage, wherever you want to call them. Jake Roberts, I think, he's just basically on essentially a legend deal at this point. He had heart surgery. Jim Ross had colon cancer. He came back from that and returned it All In. And the Rebel, who I believe is still doing makeup and doing some things backstage, had surgery for a tumor, so nothing that big there. And we have the Court of Khan. We love arbitration. Kevin
Yes.
Kelly, Kelly, Kevin Kelly, and the
We'll see
Tate
about
Twins.
that.
Yes. Kevin Kelly and the Tate Twins going to arbitration. The Ryan Nemeth lawsuit going to arbitration. And then we have this new lawsuit. John Moxley and AEW sued for negligent civil assault over 2023 Dynamite incident. We've had redacted documents. I know you guys have talked about a lot on Pollock and Thurston. But yeah, we had always good to have the court documents involve these things, huh?
Yes. Arbitration. AEW has prevailed in two cases by forcing them into arbitration, which is probably broadly in almost everybody's contract. I would think talent contracts is that they don't want you to sue them in public court and have nasty people like us talking about it. They want all that to be with a private mediator that you agree to the conditions ahead of time. arbitration, of course, is a forum that often favors employers rather than the workers. However, so in the case of the Kevin Kelly and Tate suit, I mean, where they're alleging, among other things, defamation, they were able to get that moved into arbitration. However, I was just looking today, and those plaintiffs, Kevin Kelly and the Tates, have appealed. They're going to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and they have to present their case next week. We should get out of the first briefing, where they're pushing back on the judge's decision to compel arbitration because, purportedly, according to the judge, they agreed to an arbitration clause as part of their contract, so they got to go to arbitration, not in public court. But they are appealing that. We'll see what they have to say about that soon. And the Ryan Nemeth case, complete with a screenshot of Tony Khan in the complaint brief. That also voluntarily did not take a judge's decision to put that into arbitration. Both sides came together and agreed to go to arbitration. So that's what happened there. And the John Moxley shoves a production guy lawsuit, which the production person's name is Chris Dispenza, says that he's been suffering serious neck injuries because of this incident, where he allegedly was not expecting to be shoved during the spot. This has been sent back to state court. I have not looked it up in the last few days because the judge wanted that it was originally in state court. And AW tried to move it to federal court. But to go to federal court, you have to show that everybody is from different states. And to do that, they had to show what states the people who control AEW are from. Now here's where it gets complicated. Even though in that Kevin Kelly case, they took that from state court to federal court successfully, this judge was a little tougher here in Michigan and said that, well, okay, what is AEW? It's All Elite Wrestling LLC, a limited liability company. Well, who really controls it? Who owns AEW? And it turns out this no, don't get to learn anything about whether WBD owns a portion of AEW. I think they do. If they own any of it, they certainly own less than 10% of it because there are rules in federal lawsuits where you have to disclose whether a publicly traded company owns 10% of your company, which WBD is a publicly traded company. And they say nobody does. But anyway, the who controls AEW, as we all know, it's probably the Khan family, but it's really something called Beatnik Investments LLC. I'm sure we all remember Beatnik Investments LLC from its previous media ventures in the Black News Channel, which is a Shad Khan project that I guess didn't pan out. But Beatnik Investments LLC is apparently, according to public records, and that you can look up. If by doing a business search in the state of Florida, you can find these records that show that, oh, this is an LLC whose principal members are Shanna Khan, which is Tony's sister, and one Anthony Rafik Khan, which is Tony's full name. But rather than put this all on the record, they said no. They filed some supporting documents with redactions and said that the principal members are trusts with citizenship in Illinois. So that sounds like the Khan family, right? Who are originally from Illinois. And they put redactions, though, because they didn't want certain information to be public. And the judge said, no, that's not good enough. And they said, but AI fraud. And the judge said, no, that's not good enough. You refile this with these redactions unredacted, or I'm sending you back to state court. And AW came back a few days later and said, now what? Fine, send us back to state court. And then the judge said, fine, I will send you back to state court. And there they are in state court. So this case goes on, it just goes on in a different forum, with AEW being really secretive about its ownership membership for reasons that I think have nothing to do with WBD. And I don't really understand, nor do I think there's anything really newsworthy or nefarious about it, or surprising if we knew what the full details were. But I just, it seems silly. And it's, undoubtedly going to fuel conspiracy theories.
I think,
Now, does Dave Meltzer own AEW or not?
I mean, I guess
Is he a secret owner?
I'll go on the record. I may have some documentation here that says he does not. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, okay.
We don't get the shares broken out like other companies do. You know what I mean? So we'll see. That's always a fun one. I assume that's just People, I hope people don't really think that. It's
Think
always
what?
that think that Dave owns part of AEW or Bri, like it's people are just so strange
Well,
about
somebody
this.
made up a somebody tweeted that I said that, which I've never said anything like that.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted that I reported that, just totally false. And then I think Eric Bischoff shared it or something. And I replied to every tweet that mentioned this, and I said, this is completely made up. I've never said this or anything like it. And then Eric Bischoff went on his podcast and talked about it. And then when I denied it, he talked about how I denied it and imagined reasons why I would be lying about denying it. And I sent Eric Bischoff a polite email saying, please stop this. And I never heard back from him.
Unreal, unreal. Let's see. New IP created. Spring Breakthrough. So we'll see if that's a continued thing. I was at the one of the shows in Boston, Massachusetts for that. That was actually the night that Dynamite surpassed Nitro. It was a big celebration. You know, I didn't get invited backstage for the champagne party, so I guess that my ownership stake must not include me in that. Conflicts. These are things that made their way to the public sentiment about Tony Khan, AEW. There's this discussion about Sting being allowed to do the WWE Hall of Fame induction for Lex Luger. And a little bit of political maneuvering there with WWE, I think, floating out there that they'd love to have Sting do it, but is Tony Khan going to allow him to do it? And it's this big question of, well, should he? Because he's asked for some things from Lex Luger was part of the Sting celebration, but wasn't allowed to be shown on camera. So that whole thing, and Sting, Tony Khan said at one point, I've never been asked about it, so I don't know about that. Mariah May leaving, that caused a big ruckus online and what that meant. Swerve Strickland after AEW Dynasty saying fuck Booker T. Apparently Booker T made some comments about him, and so that was something. Bear Bronson and Layla Hirsch airing their frustrations about not being used. That's always a thing that happens. And then two talents that apparently are still under contract, but are on Guantanamo Bay and never get, and they get asked about, and there's no idea what they're doing. Wardlow and Camille said to be part of the American Gladiators reboot, which I believe is already done filming. I was part of Amazon and featuring The Miz of WWE fame. So a lot of
Are
crossover
they
there.
allowed to work with The Miz?
I mean, I think they had separate rooms, and I don't know if they were allowed to look at them, or I'm not sure how that worked. Or if the Miz went over on them by, doing, the giant cannons that they had, like for the tennis balls and things like that. I think maybe there was some sort of part of that just to embarrass them or something like that. So some conflicts over this 3 month period. We'll round out with some quotable quotes. Khan, this is from various media calls and appearances. Khan surmised that the over 50 growth of his audience is on cable satellite while younger viewers are on Max. He said it doesn't affect him not having specific Max data as it's important that they're growing in general. Let's see. When it comes to WWE or scheduling things against them, like All In, it's pretty consistent. He responded when he asked how he's feeling about other companies scheduling events against AEW. I'd say it's the most
What other
consistent.
companies? Other companies
I mean,
like General Motors and Beyonce? What are we
yes,
talking about here?
yeah, pretty much. I think it might be in the World Wrestling Federation,
Oh,
owned
okay.
by TKO. I'd say it's the
I'm
most consistent.
glad that everybody just euphemizes it and says other companies, because it would basically pierce your eardrums to mention
Well,
All Elite Wrestling or World Wrestling Entertainment.
if somebody in either company heard of the other company, I surmise they would drop whatever they're doing and immediately say, I'm going to start focusing on this. I have to focus. Just leave it.
I have blinders on. I've never been affected, or I've never even thought about a competitor in my life, ever, ever. I've only just been focused on my own work at all times.
Exactly. One focus. When the Red Sox play on TV, I don't,
I
but
don't,
I pretend that another team doesn't exist. They're playing ghosts. They're playing ghosts.
I go in the dugout and I just play solitaire. That's all I do.
Let's see. I say it's the most consistent event head-to-head scheduling I've seen since Jim Crockett Promotions. Saw a lot of scheduling that went that way. And I can tell you this will go a lot differently than that did. Thank you for asking.
This is always appreciated.
Great question. Oh my God, the mega cut of the greats that you did for one of the last media calls, I thought was fantastic.
Yes.
Great, 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 great. And then finally, I mentioned I read this quote earlier about the huge year and cable lines and going up head year over year. So Nothing too crazy from TonyCon. No major PR disasters or anything like that. So I suppose
No,
it's a.
it's been better this year. There's been no Twitter outbursts. There's been not that much Twitter activity from Tony except for promoting the shows, right?
Yeah.
I guess I think there's a combination of things happening here in this year, right? So for one thing, AEW has gotten on to Max, HBO Max, whatever it's called this week. And I think that has helped them at least a little bit. It's coincided with some stabilization of their fan metrics. They got the new TV deal, so they're getting more money. In a lot of ways, things are better for AEW. And I think that the critical reception has been better too, for whatever that's worth. Meanwhile, I think one of the things that you could rightly criticize AEW for over the last few years is the lack of its own identity. Tribalism aside, I'm not sure sometimes what the actual differentiation is that they're offering wrestling fans. But this year, you've had a lot of I think WWE's insistence on doing shows at the same time as AEW, doing it to such an extent where the plausible deniability is less and less, if it was ever plausible to begin with. So they're really targeting AEW, at least with these head-to-head events, which I don't think are really a big component of a potential antitrust case. I think there are other things that are aside from that, but those are the things that are most visible to fans, which means those are the things that are most useful for establishing and making it clear what your brand is about when they're helping you become seen as an underdog and being seen as somebody who's being bullied and being something that's a strong alternative. There are people really like the pay-per-views at least, right? And people prefer it in some ways. And I've asked a few people, including guests we've had on Pollock and Thurston, how would you describe the difference? And people often point to the authenticity or something like that. In any case, critical reception's been better this year, I would say, than last year. Combined with a few other things, I mean, bringing Brock Lesnar back, stopping press conferences at the same time to avoid the questions and scrutiny that would come with that. Now, I don't think like it would be a good idea for AEW to and so establish some more things. Triple H going to the White House and being very friendly with the Trump administration and RFK Jr., et cetera. So there's those things. And obviously people feel very strongly about the Trump administration. That's a very divisive thing. Now, I wouldn't suggest that AEW should try to brand itself as like the woke wrestling, but there is a galvanizing, there are some galvanizing forces here in terms of just maybe trying to present yourself, not in words, but in actions, as the more ethical company. Not that AEW doesn't have its own issues. But as the company that is the underdog and that is being attacked. Now, that doesn't mean that Tony Khan should go on Twitter and start ranting at how he's being bullied. Another billionaire has been bullied in this culture, which is really upsetting for everyone. But I mean, I don't know what the actionable ideas are other than to keep doing what they're doing. But it does it, WWE is by embracing right-leaning politics, by evading scrutiny, by maybe arguably their product, and WrestleMania was not well received this year. They are giving AEW some opportunities to better define its identity, which I think has been one of its core issues over the last couple years.
Right. I mean, at some point, if depending on how dire things get, or if it gets dire at all, Tony Khan could do an actual real interview and talk
Yeah. Could he,
and
though? Do you think he could?
I if he want if the
Has he ever
intent
done one?
I, he yes he his answers from the early days are so much different than they are now, and just said, look, it's clear what's happening. They're trying to eradicate us. And if that happens, it's not good for wrestling, And I think there is, I think if he's just kind of, but I again, personality wise, I think most people have probably made their decisions one way or another, whether they like him or not. Why that has to define whether they like the company, I think is kind of a unique thing. But I mean, it's better for the business if they exist. Because if TNA is sold to a WWE friendly company or whatever the terminology Dave used is basically that TNA is not being sold to anyone that's not going to play nice at WWE. If W wants TNA to be the number two, you essentially control number one and two, and three
There are
is.
rumors that Impact would get a new TV deal, perhaps with someone like CW or AEW or
Right.
ANE, and they would not only do that, but go head to head with Dynamite on Wednesdays.
Right. So I if AEW doesn't, I mean, so say AEW doesn't exist, is TNA all of a sudden going to start paying wrestlers the same salaries that Tony Khan is? Probably not. And especially if they're friendly, WWE doesn't want those salaries to go up. They want more cost control. TKO wants more cost control, and AEW is a threat to that. And I'd say, but
It's really a strategy that only benefit
yeah.
that you would only be happy about if you're management of TKO and WWE. It really benefits no one else.
Right.
It doesn't benefit the wrestlers. It doesn't benefit some staff who have specific wrestling related skills. I think, I don't know. I guess what is the strategy? What do you think like the real spoken strategy is? Like, are do they? I understand Davis said that they want to make this AEW's last TV deal. I get if that's what they're doing, I guess the what I said much earlier here about an hour ago is that WBD is being split into two companies. The company that is the parent company of TNT and TBS could be consolidated into NBC or into Versant or into another company like Paramount. Those seem like the likeliest candidates. Right, because those are the maybe Fox even I wouldn't rule out. Maybe they all get merged together, whatever. And maybe WWE is able to apply some influence there, or maybe there's just a good business argument about why you would want to put all your eggs in a W basket instead of an AEW basket as a TV partner, because you want to have the strongest show possible. So why would you want to help a competitor thrive here? You have no vested interests in the health of the wrestling business. You have vested interests in your own business. And that, along with other things, I think, like Tony Khan has alluded to tampering, or he has at least secondhand said that he has heard about tampering, and I believe he has said that Mega Parrick, who was at the time the chief legal officer of AEW, sent emails to W executives saying stop tampering with our talent. But not only that, we have evidence of at least one venue agreement from 2023 where WWE had an exclusivity deal on the venue. Now maybe since MLW sued them for antitrust in civil court, maybe they've backed off some of the things that they've done. So I have to think this TKO legal team is highly aware of the antitrust issues that they are involved in, right? Because UFC is involved in much more serious antitrust issues where they're paying a $375 million settlement to, you know, to their fighters of a certain timeline. You would think they're being highly aware, and it already cost W $20 million with MLW. So, I mean, the thing I was tweeting about the other day is that it looks to me like MLW did a lot of the work for you already. They've established, well, I should be careful with my language, I guess, if we're talking about legal stuff. Like, they defined the relevant market and they made allegations against WWE that were not only particular to them, to MLW, but were particular to all of W's competitors in terms of WWE's alleged efforts to lock out, to close out everybody else out of the televised wrestling business. I mean, I almost wonder if, like, if you're AEW, why do you just call up Cassewood Spence and Torres, which is the law firm that litigated the case for MLW, and say, you guys had a lot, you know, you guys litigated this before. Should we litigate this again? And you would think that the alleged damages would be much higher, given we're talking about a significantly bigger company in AEW. I recognize that I say all this. Wow, that would be fun to cover. So
Exactly.
maybe I'm just like, you know, willing it into existence because that's something that would be fun for me to cover.
I think go ahead, finish your thought.
But not, I don't know if I'm mentioning everything that I think is happening, right? Like they've acquired AAA, which that okay, the relevant market here would be the United States televised wrestling market, right? That would be the relevant market. That's an important definition to make for antitrust case purposes. Now they've bought AAA, and you could say, well, that's just a company based in Mexico, and that's primarily what it pertains to. But you could easily look at AAA and say, well, AAA helps us get that we're trying to get them on TV probably and on some Spanish language channel. And that's definitely a significant part of the US TV market, Spanish language TV. There's tons of Spanish language television networks, and maybe that would help us dominate this market and help push out a competitor like AEW. And whatever they're doing with TNA, this is where I would defer to a lawyer and say I'm not a lawyer, but even if they don't do not directly own TNA, and maybe if a close friend of TKO management owns TNA, I think that would still contribute to a case. And likewise, even if they don't have exclusivity clauses in all of their TV deals with Netflix, NBC Universal, ESPN, Fox, Tubi, CW, even if it doesn't say in their contracts that you can't make any TV deals with any other wrestling company, well, I think, well, for one thing, it's not like they're going to publicize the contracts to negate those allegations until it gets to discovery. So you could at least allege that and get them to prove that wrong. Nonetheless, I think just having that many relationships across that many partners could exude influence that could amount to antitrust, help amount to an antitrust case. So I don't I have no idea if that's something that AEW is thinking about. That's not something that anybody is like nudging me along about. These are just my own thoughts. Looking at what's happening, how aggressive they're being, and like I'm surprised that they have been more aggressive, at least towards AEW, not less aggressive, since the MLW lawsuit settlement cost them $20 million.
This past week plus with the new PLE that's coming against All Out. That's going to be apparently on ESPN, and how that also works in the Peacock deal. Dave and Brian were talking about that Brian is under the impression that the rest of the PLEs are also going to air on ESPN. And Dave's like, well, contractually, they have the domestic rights, Peacock does. So how's that going to work? Because they're not like, Peacock has no interest in working with ESPN. They're essentially competitors in a sense. So how would that work? So that's a whole thing. But yeah,
Yeah,
as the
I would be surprised. I mean, I understand, and we did reach out to ESPN to ask them, is this going to be on ESPN? And they declined to comment. There have to be some sort of agreement, I would think, between NBC Universal and ESPN to allow that to happen. I would be surprised if that happens.
Yeah. And then yeah, I so even then
And by that, I mean all of the rest of the PLEs for the rest of the year. Maybe there's one
Plus,
off because you only owe them a certain number per month or something like that.
and then there's the ones in the first 3 months of next year too,
Right.
as it goes.
I expect them to have rights through March of next year.
So yeah, I thought between that and then the Saturday Night's Main Event potentially going head to head with World's End. It's like kind of one of the first times they've said we're going to put our main roster product head to head, because always they send out the first waves of NXT and AAA or whatever, and they take the hits, and then they kind of have not really gone full in, and they're kind of starting to do that, which it's interesting to me. It's like they're having, if this TNA thing happens, it's like just do it yourself, put on make a third show and put do it yourself. But it's almost like they don't want to potentially lose, but there's potentially law. It's a whole, like, it's just a very
I think
very
there's
thing.
two things in there in that you don't want to actually get the impact. You don't want to hurt your best content. You don't want to hurt your main roster content by putting it head to head with wrestling, even though, yes, they're much bigger than AEW and their audience will be much bigger. It hurts you less to put NXT in the way rather than your main roster product in the way. And I guess maybe to a lesser extent, it's a calculus of you don't want to invite a fan comparison of your main roster content versus AEW's content. If people prefer the AEW content, well, they're only preferring it over NXT. They're not preferring it over our main show. Who put on the better show tonight? That's easier to swallow if it's NXT that's the loser there.
I'm not, I'm, if I'm WWE also, like, if AEW goes away, it's a nice, like, you can sign their free agents. People come up and they are on a nationally televised show, and you get a free look. Instead of thinking like, how would they work here? You can say, huh, all right, we may change this or this, but that'd be someone we'd want on our roster. And if you take that away, I mean, you're gonna get that same feel in teenage. I don't know. For the people that just want this AEW thing to end just because, like, I don't think they do. We've done this before. We saw what happened. It was WB and then TNA, a gap.
Clearly, WWE, they do want to dominate this market even more,
Yeah.
which is not in itself an antitrust violation. Competing hard is not an antitrust violation, to be clear. There are specific things that where you're closing out the market and diminishing people's ability to compete and diminishing the fan, diminishing the consumer's availability of choice, and things like their ticket prices continuing to be high and well sold might actually help a plaintiff in an antitrust case. Anyway, I think, and clearly there's animosity there for whatever reason. I think, I don't know. I can't imagine what they're thinking. Like they deserve to own all of it, I guess. Or what I think is AW really shouldn't have existed if not for Vince's fumbling of creative for all those years, which was, among a few other things, essential to that opportunity. But I think it's interesting to think about the when Richard Deitch had Chris LaGentle on, I was before WrestleMania or something, and asked him is if there's I think he was bringing up how they're working with TNA. Is there any interest in doing like a big super show with another part with other partners, or including AEW? LaGentle said no. And so clearly, like they're willing to talk about everybody else, but not these people over here.
No.
They're a little too close,
Exactly.
even though they're really far away.
Well, we'll not be too far away when you and I talk again in September. And actually, yeah, July. Actually, wait, July, August, September. Yeah, that's the next. We'll actually talk at in what, October. I'm like, what month is after September? I actually just blanked out there complete. But we'll talk about Q3 and all this as well. So yeah, you can follow Brandon on Twitter or X on at Brandon Thurston. WrestleNomics also on there as well. And I do not know if he's doing TikTok dances yet. I can't
No, I'm
remember.
not. I'm
Nope.
not really, no.
You can go to WrestleNomics.com for $5 a month. You can subscribe and get all the great numbers and info there. You can also go to WrestleNomics Substack account if you prefer that as well. $10 a month gets you access to more data at WrestleNomics.com. And what else did I always ask? What else did I forget?
I don't know.
Paulik and Thurston on Wednesdays.
Paulik Thurston's is Wednesdays. That's on all the YouTube and podcast channels and things of that nature.
Completely free
That is completely free.
on Spotify on both the Post Channel and WrestleNomics. I am actually subscribed to both on Spotify. Give me both downloads. And yeah, you can watch obviously on YouTube as well. So yeah, I think that's about it. And yeah, once again, I thank you for your time, and we'll talk in just a couple months. Brandon Thurston,
Sounds good.
thanks so much.
Thanks.
All right, big thanks to Brandon Thurston for stopping by as always. And you can check him out at WrestleNomics, all the plugs I gave during that show, and also Pollock and Thurston as well. And yeah, what else is going on? Wrestling Observer Live. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to do. My summer run is coming to an end, just like summer romance, fleeting as it is. It's coming to an end in the next 2 weeks, and then Andrew Zarian will be back on Sundays. I appreciate the listeners on Wrestling Observer Live. It's been fun to do. Brought back the 2 hour shows for the first time in years, showing that it can be done. And solo, how about that? Doing the stuff solo. And I've been trying to get a couple different guests on for this show. I've been unsuccessful with one. I was supposed to have Samoa Joe on during his media tour for Twisted Metal. We had the date set up as part of this media tour he was doing. It wasn't going to be a long one, 20 or so minutes, and it had to get pushed back by the PR people. And then I learned the other day that he's no longer doing any more interviews for Twisted Metal. So that was kind of a bummer. I was looking forward to having him and saw some other websites get interviews with him and made me a little bit more irritated by it. But yeah, so you can, I was going to say, you can watch Twisted Metal if you want. I've watched a couple episodes. If I was interviewing him, I was going to watch the whole series. And I'm kind of glad I don't have to. It's not the best show, but no slight on Samoa Joe. He's doing his thing, so I'm not going to be too bitter there. However, there is another wrestler who appears on TV quite frequently, not on a wrestling product that I am trying to lock down. We've been trying to get this done for weeks and weeks. I don't want to spoil it, but it should be a fun conversation. We can make it happen. I'm confident we can. I'll be doing that and also some other interviews as we look ahead to the fall. And of course, the planning for the year in review series has begun. So that will be coming up again. I'm going to start verifying with some folks that they can do it again. So we'll be planning it out. But yeah, we have a lot more to come throughout the year. So I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com, including this one. So until next time, insert catchphrase here.